Good morning again.
Good morning.
Morning.
Is there a clock? Could you hand me that clock? So, we are here at Hokkioji, which is a little bit remote and doesn't always have strong internet. And for some of us, that's a blessing because we're here and we're unplugged. But we wanted to plug in on Sunday to talk to all of you. So welcome to everyone at Claws and Water. Welcome to the Hokkioji folks on Zoom. We're really happy to have all of you here with us. So my talk this morning is on the theme of our retreat, which is realizing deep peace and relaxation. And I'd like to begin with a land and ancestor acknowledgement. We are here at Hokkioji Zen Practice Community, sitting on the traditional homelands of our indigenous siblings, the Ocheti Sakowin, Sauk, and Meskwaki. We acknowledge that this is stolen land. We pay homage to these indigenous ancestors and to the resilience of their descendants who are still here. And we invite ourselves to think about something we can do in the present to make amends. So one small thing that I'm currently doing is giving a monthly donation to the American Indian Center in Minneapolis. And I'm also regularly going there in person to have lunch at the Gatherings Cafe. So I invite you to consider what you would like to do. I also want to acknowledge our spiritual family in the near past, especially the founder of this place, Dainin Katagiri, and all the many people who have practiced Soto Zen Buddhism here for over 40 years. We are grateful for all the teachers who have come before us. I acknowledge that we live in a country that has forced the displacement of many groups and continues to do so. And that we live in a country in which many are still suffering from white supremacy and the legacy of slavery. And we can also acknowledge the good works, the wheels set in motion for positive change and wholesome spiritual and social practices. And we can invite ourselves to continue good works and consider ways in which we can support the many beings who have supported us. May all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. So this acknowledgement, I feel, is very much related to the theme of my talk today, realizing deep peace and relaxation. So for those of us spending time here, either for a few more days or for the rest of the week, we're going to be kind of using as a framework for the topics, the Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage by Shuto. And if I talk a lot about the history and context and background of that, I won't have time to talk about the other things I want to say. So you can soon, when we have the rest of our talks online, you can look up the talk I gave some time ago where I gave a lot of background, because I love this poem. It's a beautiful teaching poem and worth reflecting on. So what Myo-on and I, Myo-on is co-leading the retreat with me, and we've divided up the poem into sections, and we're going to kind of go in a little more detail, but also kind of, like I said, using that as a framing device for other things we might talk about. But I would like to just read it, and for those of you who have been here already, we've been reciting or chanting this at noon, and a lot of you are familiar with it, but I just would like to read the whole thing, and then we can just let that settle in. So this is the poem. Song of the Grass Roof Hermitage. I've built a grass hut where there's nothing of value. After eating, I relax and enjoy a nap. When it was completed, fresh weeds appeared. Now it's been lived in, covered by weeds. The person in the hut lives here calmly, not stuck to inside, outside, or in between. Places worldly people live, one doesn't live. Realms worldly people love, one doesn't love. Though the hut is small, it includes the entire world. In 10 feet square, an old one illumines forms and their natures. A Mahayana Bodhisattva trusts without doubt. The middling or lowly can't help wondering, will this hut perish or not? Perishable or not, the original master is present. Not dwelling south or north, east or west. Firmly based on steadiness, it can't be surpassed. A shining window below the green pines. Jade palaces or vermilion towers can't compare with it. Just sitting with head covered, all things are at rest. Thus, this mountain monk doesn't understand at all. Living here, one no longer works to get free. Who would proudly arrange seats, trying to entice guests? Turn the light to shine within, then just return. The vast, inconceivable source can't be faced or turned away from. Meet the ancestral teachers. Be familiar with their instruction. Find grasses to build a hut and don't give up. Let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. Open your hands and walk innocent. Thousands of words, myriad interpretations are only to free you from obstruction. If you want to know the undying person in the hut, don't separate from this skin bag here and now. I should have asked on Zoom, are you able to hear me okay, or should I talk louder? Is it okay, thumbs up? All right, thank you. That's good, because I feel like I kind of don't need to say anything else after that, but I do have 3 pages of things I could say. So this is my view. If we cannot realize deep peace, so the kind of peace that Shirto talks about in this poem, if we cannot realize deep peace, if we cannot find relaxation in the midst of the turbulence of our world, then we can't really help anyone. If our deep compassion and empathy results in us being overwhelmed by the suffering of others or by our own suffering, then it seems to me we're no longer firmly walking on the Bodhisattva path. So the Bodhisattva path, the path of a being whose mission it is to save beings from suffering. Because if we're caught in suffering ourselves, even if it's the sort of empathetic suffering, really like being with people, but if we're caught in it, how can we help others? That's my question. And so my mind goes to, well, of course, we can cry with others, we can share their sorrow, we can share their anger, their frustration, and actually that's helpful to be with people in that way. But if we only stay there, then it's not helping. So even if we do good works to help others, like freeing people who are wrongly imprisoned, or feeding hungry children, or stopping a war, or stopping violence, if we do those things while stuck in suffering, then we're not really addressing the root of suffering. So that's why I said at the beginning, may all beings be free from suffering and the root of suffering. So yes, we should, if we can, we should free people from prison. We should feed hungry children. We should stop war and violence if we can do those things. And actually, we don't need to wait until we're perfect to do anything like that. So it's not about like, oh, I have to not be stuck in suffering. I have to wait till I can be there before I help anyone. We can just go ahead and do it. But at the same time, we can cultivate this thoroughgoing freedom from suffering and the root of suffering. We can invite ourselves to do that. So to help with that invitation, I'd like to share some thoughts from Thich Nhat Hanh, Vietnamese Zen, great Zen teacher. When he was alive, my teacher Joan used to call him a living Buddha. And this is from the little book Being Peace, which is one of the early books that he wrote of the hundreds of books, I think hundreds of books he's written. And it's the chapter is Suffering is Not Enough. So I'll read a little bit. He says, life is filled with suffering, but it is also filled with many wonders, like the blue sky, the sunshine, the eyes of a baby. So those of us here at Hokkyoji, I think I ran into someone yesterday who gave a big sigh, and I thought, oh, what's wrong? And then they said, it's so quiet here. So what was wrong was just like releasing all of the, oh, everything else. So yes, those things are the many wonders. And then he says, to suffer is not enough. We must also be in touch with the wonders of life. They are within us and all around us, everywhere, anytime. So sometimes we need to come to a place to remember. He says, if we're not happy, if we are not peaceful, we cannot share peace and happiness with others, even those we love, those who live under the same roof. If we are peaceful, if we are happy, we can smile and blossom like a flower, and everyone in our family, our entire society, will benefit from our peace. Do we need to make a special effort to enjoy the beauty of the blue sky? Do we have to practice to be able to enjoy it? No, we can just enjoy it. Each second, every minute of our lives can be like this. Wherever we are, anytime, we have the capacity to enjoy the sunshine, the presence of each other, even the sensation of our breathing. We don't need to go to China to enjoy the blue sky. We don't have to travel into the future to enjoy our breathing. We can be in touch with these things right now. It would be a pity if we were only aware of suffering. And then he said something about meditation, which I'll just read this next part too. Meditation is to be aware of what is going on in our bodies, in our feelings, in our minds, and in our world. Each day, and the number might be higher now, but he says, each day, 40,000 children die of hunger. The superpowers have now more than 50,000 nuclear warheads, enough to destroy our planet many times. Yet, the sunrise is beautiful, and the rose that bloomed this morning along the wall is a miracle. Life is both dreadful and wonderful. To practice meditation is to be in touch with both aspects. I underlined that. To practice meditation is to be in touch with both aspects. Please do not think we must be solemn in order to meditate. In fact, to meditate well, we have to smile a lot. So, speaking for myself and probably many of us, say that we're not in touch with that deep aspect of peace and relaxation most of the time. So that's why we need to spend more time cultivating that. He said you don't have to work or practice to enjoy the blue sky, but you kind of have to cultivate, like remembering to enjoy it. So there is kind of a shadow side of this. So some people use meditation kind of in a selfish way as an escape. So that can turn into a phrase I learned recently, toxic positivity. I'm like, what even is toxic positivity? Like, positive would be good, but then, oh, you know, so that's where it's like kind of a fake positive. So it's like, the strict definition is dysfunctional emotional management without full acknowledgement of negative emotions. So like you're managing your emotions by not acknowledging some of them and then just focusing on this. And then it says particularly anger and sadness are like ones that tend to be shunted off. And then there's socially the act of dismissing another person's negative emotions by, you know, oh, just cheer up. You know, it's really fine. Look on the bright side.
Turn your frown upside down.
Yeah, right. Turn your frown upside down. So if you are that type of person who tends to like want to, you know, to manage your emotions by putting aside and like, I have to be positive, then your spiritual growth may really benefit from inviting yourselves to open to the suffering of others and practice really being present with the world just as it is, with all the terrible things as well as the wonderful things. So you can do that, you can start that by inviting yourselves to be present to some minor inconvenience. And that's why I think retreats or sessions are so helpful, because we set this container up and for the most part, it's kind of set up in a way that there's many beautiful things, like especially here, we come to a beautiful place, we have quiet, and in the first part of the session, especially we're trying to leave enough space for breaks, people can take their time, and still something will happen. You know, someone's slurping their tea too loud next to you, or whatever. Or you walk outside, oh, it's so humid.
Mosquitoes.
Yeah, mosquitoes. You know, whatever it is, something will come up that you don't like. And then you get to have this wonderful support to be present with that little thing you don't like and see how that is. And then also being really kind with yourself, because if you're practicing positive or toxic positivity, it's probably due to your own trauma or your own, you know, deep wounds. So, or a deep fear around being with the negative emotions. So cutting yourself some slack, even with that, to like, oh yes, this I see, or I have a sense or a hint, this may be why. But maybe you're the type of person who's not really afraid of negative emotions. In fact, you're so in touch with suffering and willing to be with it that you become overwhelmed. So in that case, and this is what I think Thich Nhat Hanh is referring to, your practice may benefit from opening yourself to the non-suffering of the world. Actually, even if you're practicing toxic positivity, you probably need to open up to the non-suffering of the world, really open to it, as well as opening to the suffering. You need to have both. But it's like sort of what you go to first depends on your own habit patterns and energies. So if you're the type of person that feels like, yeah, I need, you know, to solve the problems of the world, I just have to suffer. Like, I can't be happy if any single person is unhappy in the world, if there's starvation, if there's war, you know, all the horrible things. And so you kind of lean into that. And Thich Nhat Hanh and I would say, yeah, like, what about remembering the non-suffering of the world and in yourself? Where is the non-suffering? Can I be present with the world just as it is, with both aspects, with all the wonderful things as well as the terrible things? And here also, you can start by noticing something small. So if it's like hard to shift to just like the positive things, because it feels even fakey to you if you're the type of person who's more leaning into the suffering. So then can you notice, like, I love Thich Nhat Hanh talks about the non-toothache. Like, you have a toothache and it's like your whole body is a toothache and it's so painful. And then eventually it goes away. And usually you don't think then, oh, my whole body is like a non-toothache right now. Or when you're really sick and then you get well, it's like, oh, I can breathe easily, my nose isn't stuffed up. So like every once in a while, just remembering that. Or just, you know, like, I have a lot of pain in my body, but my little pinky finger doesn't have pain right now, you know, or something like that. So just really being present with some small non-suffering. So then there's another thing that can happen. Another type of person or habit pattern could be a person, and maybe some of you here are like that, overwhelmed by the suffering and then wanting to be free from suffering, wanting to escape into peace. So a lot of times people come to a retreat like that, like, oh, there's just so much suffering, I just want to get away. Or sometimes people take a vacation like that, you know, like, I just want to go on a cruise. There's too much, you know, happening. So, boy, if you're that kind of person, I want to say, that's okay. Because you can, that wish to be free from suffering, that's like a bodhisattva wish for yourself. Bodhisattva, that being who wants to free all beings from suffering. So like when you want to free yourself from suffering, even if maybe your method of doing it wouldn't be the most, you know, beneficial in the long run, but that initial impulse of wanting to be free from suffering is something that you can just receive that very strongly. Just allow that to come in really strongly. And then if you're in a situation, like if you come on a retreat, you can receive any relaxation and peace that comes your way. Just receive it. So really receive it and then see what happens when other things come your way. So you don't have to be on a retreat to do this either. You can do this in your regular life. And then just really inviting yourself to be present with all the things and seeing what happens. And if you get overwhelmed again, which can very easily happen, then you can return to an inner or outer refuge. So inner refuge might just be the breathing, sort of stabilizing your body. Outer refuge might be, you know, taking a warm bath if you're at home, or going for a walk, or having a cup of tea. And letting your strength return until you're stable enough to invite everything again. So Thich Nhat Hanh has a few more things to say about this. I'll read. He says, from time to time, to remind ourselves to relax, to be peaceful, we may wish to set aside some time for a retreat or a day of mindfulness when we can walk slowly, smile, drink tea with a friend, enjoy being together as if we are the happiest people on earth. This is not a retreat, it is a treat. During walking meditation, during kitchen and garden work, during sitting meditation, all day long we can practice smiling. At first, you may find it difficult to smile, and we have to think about why. Smiling means that we are ourselves and that we have sovereignty over ourselves, that we are not drowned in forgetfulness. This kind of smile can be seen on the faces of Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So think about that. The smile is a really settled, like, I am me, I am here. I am present with myself and with everything. So we can say those things, but then how do we build up that resilience, that strength to be with everything? And that's where we practice. And we practice deep peace and relaxation. And then eventually we can really be ourselves. Ourselves, our true selves that includes everything. So in Zazen meditation practice, you sit, be with what is. You might focus on your breath. You might focus on sounds. You might say a phrase to yourself to help you get settled. So sometimes I say phrases from the Song of the Grassroots Hermitage, like, the person in the hut lives here calmly. Or one of my favorites, let go of hundreds of years and relax completely. There's a lot of good lines in there, and it's in the chant books if you want to look later. It's also on online on the Cloud's website in our chant book if you want to look later and you're on Zoom. So, getting in touch with my breath, or focusing on sounds, or saying a phrase to myself, and then I invite myself to just be with what is, with whatever's coming up in that moment. Just be who I am in that moment. Just manifest myself in that moment, which is kind of an effortless way to be myself. Like, I don't have to do anything special. I've sort of set the tone first by settling myself in my breath or sounds, sitting pose, a phrase, and then I don't have to do anything extra. But the extra part is remembering to do it. So, and in my sitting, I probably have to remember many, many, many times, many times. So mind goes here and then remember. Come back to my sitting, my breath, or the sounds, or a phrase, or just being present. And if I've been thinking about something else, then when I notice that, oh, then the thinking about something else is how I'm manifesting in that moment. So I don't try to do something different other than like see what's happening. And then maybe I say to myself, I don't really have to think about that right now. I'm just sitting here. I don't have to worry about that right now. I can be here. But I don't criticize myself internally for having taken that so-called detour, because it's not really a detour. It's just who I am in the moment. And then, as I mentioned, you know, there's almost always something that comes up that I don't like when I'm sitting. And so then I practice being present with that peacefully, allowing it to be, allowing myself to just be, and asking myself a question: can I manifest myself as a person who is sitting in zazen with hatred or aversion or grief or anxiety? Whatever it is, I invite myself to just allow it to be. I can be such a person because I am such a person in that moment. That's what's happening. So Katagiri Roshi, who I mentioned is the founder of Hokkyoji and also the founder of MZMC, and we consider our honorary founder of Clouds, he gave a Dharma talk back in 1983. That included some words about how you manifest yourself in zazen. And I think this is also about being our true selves, including everything, how we manifest ourselves. So I'd like to share a few snippets from his talk. He says, if you do zazen, there are two points you have to do. You have to do zazen with your effort, both physically and mentally too. Anyway, you should do zazen with your body. So I think that's the first point, is doing zazen with some effort physically and mentally, and especially with your body. He says, but if you really concentrate on doing zazen with your effort, this zazen is seen from your perspective. So it's still kind of one, just one-sided. So then he says, simultaneously, if you really jump into zazen with your physical and mental effort, at that time, zazen and you are one. So the way I understand this is there's the doing zazen with your effort, physically and mentally, and then there's this jumping in, which is kind of beyond effort. I'll finish what he has to say about it, though. Simultaneously, if you really jump into zazen with your physical and mental effort, at that time, zazen and you are one. So zazen and you are not different. And also, zazen is not different from the table. You are not different from the wall. Anyway, the wall, the table, and cups, and the zazen you do, and you as a practicer are all the same beings, which exist simultaneously in space. This is regardless of whether you are conscious of it or not. I underlined that. This is regardless of whether you are conscious of it or not. This is a characteristic of space. In space, there are many beings existing simultaneously in peace and harmony. And I mentioned sort of to the people at Hokkyoji, kind of as a joke, but kind of as like how we move in the space. I said the center part of the Zendo is emptiness. So we don't like cross into emptiness. So we walk along the edges. But right now for this talk, everyone is sitting in emptiness. Oh, it's great. This is the characteristic of space. In space, there are many beings existing simultaneously in peace and harmony. So you really handle Zazen as an object as well as your life. You and Zazen are exactly the same as other beings. Okay, actually, I want to read one more section from Katagiri. I'll probably come back to this also later in the week because it's so great. He says, and then when you practice at that time, you really become one with Zazen and your effort. And then it means you manifest yourself in Zazen. Zazen manifests itself in you. So simultaneously, it means you manifest not in you, not in the Zazen you do, but in the universe, because space. Actually, he said something else in between, but the Kikan, the transcriber, said unintelligible. So I just say, it means you manifest not in you, not in Zazen you do, but in the universe, because space. I think it works. Consciousness cannot see it, but physically, if you do it exactly like this, simultaneously, you manifest yourself in Zazen and in the universe. So the whole universe responds to your practice. So that's why you feel good anyway. So sometimes when you feel good in Zazen, that might be why. So if someone asks you why you feel good, you don't know why, but you feel good anyway. And when you feel good, you can help others at the root. Not just save them from suffering due to a lack of food or violence or whatever, but save them from suffering due to attachment to a separate self, a suffering at the core. And even if you don't teach that explicitly, Thich Nhat Hanh says, people see your smile, they're touched, they're moved by that. Something happens. They can maybe touch that teaching. And you're really able to be with them in their suffering without aversion. That when you feel good like that, because everything is included, because you are manifesting yourself in Zazen, and Zazen is manifesting in you, and you are putting some effort here, and you're also jumping in beyond your effort, and the universe is responding. Which is happening all the time, whether we're conscious of it or not. But when we get like a little glimpse of, we know what's happening, or we recall that or remember that, then we resonate with it in a different kind of way. And people see our smile and are touched. And we're able to be with their suffering without that pushing away, without that aversion, to just love them. And the reason is because we've been practicing being with our own suffering without aversion. And then when you do the so-called helping activity, the thing that we mostly think of as helping, like handing food to someone, stopping the hand of someone with a knife, when we do those things, it's deeply imbued with wisdom and compassion. And what we do and how we do it has a different quality. And that's why cultivating deep peace and relaxation is not selfish. but actually a very compassionate and loving action. And even if we start out where it's kind of selfish, like I came here because I was really suffering and I wanted to have peace, whether here is Hokyoji or just coming to the Dharma talk. Even if that was like the impetus, then when we stay with it, it's not selfish. If we keep with it, it's not selfish. It can't be selfish because we're not separate. So we're connected. So our wish for our own peace is a wish for the peace of others. Our wish for our own relaxation and joy is a wish for the joy and relaxation of others. So I'd like to encourage you, especially those of you here at Hokyoji on retreat, to view this retreat as the taking a break, as the, you know, sort of manifesting or realizing, remembering non-suffering. But within the retreat, there are also activities and breaks. So some activities might seem more like a break than others. Like it's, when it actually says break on the schedule, that might seem more like a break. Mm-hmm. And when it's like, now I'm signed up to do dishes, might not seem like a break. But we can have the break. So like enjoy the break, whether it's the whole retreat, our whole life. enjoy the specific break and then invite ourselves to also have that. Can I bring a relaxation? Can I include everything? Can I include peace and relaxation in some of the activities I'm doing? Can I remember that there's not just suffering of like one dish after another dish after another dish, but there's also being present here with my hands, with the soapy water, with the other people around me? And so that can be true in retreat and not in retreat. But those of us in retreat, you have this wonderful opportunity. So I hope you will take it. And I hope that together, all of us, retreatants and non-retreatants, can cultivate the heart-mind of deep peace and relaxation. Thank you.